Hello, Western Wisconsin. Let's see what we're up to. Welcome to Spectrum West for a Thursday, the 8th day of May. I'm Al Ross. We have a sardine can today, so let's dig right in. Today, a conversation I had over lunch with the last river rat, Mr. Kenny Solway, about his latest book and about the art of being righteous. That's like righteous, but this is righteous. Tony Zammit, new executive director of the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra, is here with Saturday's concert preview. Jim Oliver talks with Jody Peck, directing Alice's Adventures in Wonderland in Shell Lake. They're getting ready to swing in Menominee Saturday. It's the spring swing at the high school, and it's music, dancing, food, auctions, and more. It puts the fun in fundraiser. And we begin today with an introduction, although I have a feeling most of you have already met one of the matriarchs of Western and Northwest Wisconsin's artistic family. She remains one of its busiest members, Patricia Mayhew Ham. Over 40 years of painting and now mentoring as well in Chautauqua, Wisconsin. She likes the abstract, and I wondered if that devotion developed over time or was it there right at the starting line?
Oh, no, I started like many people start, realistically, you know, painting pretty little landscapes, happy little landscapes, mm-hmm. and still lifes and things like that. So I started back there with oils many, many years ago, and I went to acrylics because I was so impatient with oils, the drying of the oils.
Mm.
And this has been quite a few years ago, of course. Went into acrylics, and then I started painting acrylics on stretched canvas, and then my paints, I kept watering them down so they were thinner and thinner. And Alan Servas, who's a good friend, said, "Why aren't you painting in watercolor?" And I said, "Because watercolor is boring, because you can't get any bright colors." And he said, "I think you should try it." I started in watercolor and found out I can have brilliant, brilliant color, which is what, if you remember my work at all, it is. Mm-hmm. I love color. It's just real important to me. Then I just got looser and looser, and then I have no need for reality in my paintings. I find it boring because you know what it's going to be. When you do an abstract, I have no idea what it's going
to
be.
We hear all the time about people escaping. You know, they have to escape to get away from whatever. You've admitted that you hope people can escape into your art. How about you? Do you escape into your art?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can start painting and you sort of forget everything.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody has problems, it's a wonderful thing, you know, because you can get over any issues that you have because you get so into the art. And I'm so passionate about what I do. I love what I do. It's just I would never quit painting. I was quite ill last year, and my first thing I asked was, do I still have my creativity?
Ah.
I wasn't worried about anything else other than my creativity.
Did your illness affect what you were doing?
Yes, because I was close to dying, and God saved me. Say, okay, why did he save me? So I'm supposed to be doing teaching, I think, more.
So when you had a new lease on life, what did it do to your art?
Oh, first of all, I had some out-of-body experiences, and I've wanted to express those. And, of course, it didn't really work that way. It's made me more passionate about what I'm doing. It's made me want to paint every single day.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Nothing else seems important other than painting.
As if there's a reason that you've been given a second chance.
Exactly, yeah.
And you have to make the most of that reason.
Exactly. You know that life is tenuous, but when you really come close to it, you really know it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how much longer am I going to have? I'm going to paint and paint and paint. My poor family's going to have a heck of a lot of paintings to get rid of.
So when you were lying in the hospital, I've read about the fact that your mind is always going. Was it always going then, too? Was the artistic finding a way into your dilemma?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I was amazing. I was at Mayo, and I had to go see all the paintings they had there. I made in a wheelchair, you know, encase myself in art. I wish more people were more open to art. I wish more people were more open to abstract. I have a thing where I think people have what I call a need to identify.
Mm-hmm.
They look at a painting and say, oh, I see a deer in there. I see that in there. Why do you need to know what you're looking at?
Mm-hmm.
You either like it or you don't.
Interesting that you are an abstract artist, but when you had your physical problem, that was realism smacking you in the face.
Yeah, that's for sure.
There was no abstract side to that.
No.
You believe in divine intervention with your art, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
What does it give you?
Creativity.
Okay.
I think everybody has creativity to some extent. A lot of people won't listen to it, won't, you know, be aware of it. And I wish I would have known this more 40 years ago, 50 mm-hmm. years ago, that I could do this. Nobody ever said to me when I was a little girl, you can be an artist. No, they knew I was creative, but that was it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I didn't come from a family that was into the arts at all.
We're on the phone here on Spectrum West with Patricia Mayhew Ham, and she's speaking to us from her studio in Chautauqua. Tell us about Yupo.
Oh, Yupo. It's one of my second loves. Yupo is what I paint on mostly. It's not paper. It's plastic. And it was made designed first for the packaging industry. The first thing they made out of it was milk cartons. It is impervious to most things. It's like painting on Formica. The paint can't soak in like it does in watercolor paper. Therefore, it has to dry by evaporation, and it stays vivid. The color stays so bright. And I am definitely a colorist. I want a lot of color, a lot of contrast and drama in my painting. I've been painting on it for probably about 14, 15 years. And I teach a lot of workshops. I've taught workshops on it. And then one day I decided I wanted it black. So my husband and I experimented and came up with a way to paint it black. And the bright colors on the black Yupo with metallic colors are really dramatic, and I like that a lot.
Wow.
It's very exciting.
I feel like I've been living in a cave somewhere, not having heard of Yupo before.
Yeah, well, a lot of watercolors don't like it. If they're a watercolor who draws their image in and then paints it, they won't like it because you cannot control it. But some colors will blend, and some of them will fight because their chemical makeups are different. And it's fascinating. You drop paint down on the wet Yupo, and you watch to see what's going to happen. Some of my students and I will stand there and watch it. What's going to happen? You know, and then when you let it dry, okay, what can I do with this? Because with Yupo, you have the ability to take a wet brush when it's dry and lift up out the paint. So you can create your design and your composition by lifting out the color.
I'm imagining it.
Good.
You've been given a lot of awards. You've been honored over the years. You have another one coming up in the ECRAC Jubilee 2014.
Huh?
It's coming up in June on the 5th. You were chosen to be the artist of what, residence?
Featured artist.
Featured artist. That's good.
Yeah,
thank you for
putting that. Every year artists donate paintings to be auctioned off at that function.
Okay.
And this year I'm the featured artist, so my art will be featured. And
okay.
I did a big painting for them.
Okay, and ECRAC also has the inaugural season of community-supported art. You are one of the artists chosen for that as well.
I'm one of nine that was created, and we'll be doing 25 pieces of art, each one of us. They want the community to come in, and it's going to be like a farmer's market kind of thing is the thing they have in mind. And it's kind of new, so I'm a little hazy on part of it, too.
Yeah, well, we'll keep people posted of the progress of that here on Spectrum West. That'll be a lot of fun.
And also, they're having the fabulous florals and fine art in August at the Janet Carson Gallery, where art and flowers are going to be put together.
I think what I'll do is let you get back to your workshops, because you're in the middle of one right now, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
I always am impressed by artists who put on workshops. Is that because they feel a responsibility to grow other artists or share what you have? What's your motivation?
That's my motivation. I love teaching adults and watching them blossom. I have a lot of students who are retired art teachers because they didn't get to do what they wanted to do. And obviously they loved art. That's why they went to school for it.
Uh-huh. What's your method? What kind of a teacher are you?
Oh, we just have fun.
You do.
I'm not a cookbook art, they call it. I paint something, they paint something. I don't do that at all. I teach techniques. I demonstrate a lot. I will demonstrate a technique for them. And then they can try that technique in however way they want to.
And they're hard at work right now?
Yes, they are. I just have six of them. That's all that fits in my studio, and they're all out there working.
Well, thanks for spending time with us, and I'm so happy you got through your physical challenges. And
yep.
Good to have you back, and we're looking for even bigger and better things from you.
Thank you.
In reality, we should be the ones saying thank you to Patricia and artists like her who not only share their talent but are willing to share their enthusiasm as well. Take a look. After all, that's what visual art is all about. At her website, which is artistic-innovations.net. Spectrum West, thanks for being with us today. Several programs ago, we were briefly introduced to the new executive director of the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra. Today, we spend a few more minutes with Tony Zammit asking about how it's going and what to look forward to in Saturday's final concert of the 2013-14 season.
The more I delve into my office, the happier I am that I took this job. I think that people here in Eau Claire really don't realize the amazing talent we have in the symphony. And I think that this upcoming performance is really going to highlight that.
It seems as if every performance does, for a different reason.
It does. And I think that you look back at the history of the symphony, where we've come from in terms of our roots and where we're going, we're starting to get to the point where we're doing more and more shows like the one that's coming up, the Bartok and Strauss show, which really, really focus on high-level performance to a degree that I think a lot of smaller regional orchestras like ours are normally afraid to do, but we now have that talent base that we're not afraid to try to hit one out of the park.
Back to your position as executive director. Tell me about the process of getting to know everything so that you can direct in an executive fashion, because there are a lot of people with whom you have to associate and get to know.
There is a tremendous amount of people, of course. We have our board members.
Yeah.
Then we have
it's a big board.
We have a very large board, and then on top of that, we have a very large donor base that it's getting to know these folks who have been such great supporters of the arts in the area and form that relationship with them so they can help the symphony move forward. And we were fortunate enough, my wife and I, that a board member, Mitch Piper and his wife, this past weekend threw us a great party where we got to really get to know a lot of the donors from the area. And so we're very, very grateful to them for that.
And that's not to mention all the members of the orchestra.
All the members of the orchestra. And so we finally got a chance this last couple of weeks to actually get me up in front of the orchestra and say a few words, just how grateful I am and how thankful I am to be a part of their organization. It's really about them at the end of the day. Guys like me, we're just out there trying to help raise the money to support it all. At the end of the day, it's all about Nobu and our amazing symphony and its members.
We should bring up that we lost one of our founders recently.
We did, Dale Young. What can you say about Dale? 40 years in the symphony. He was there for our first concert and was playing up until December. He, of course, has a great history of education here in the Chippewa Valley. We this next concert, we really would like to make it a dedication to Dale and all that he did for us. We can't thank him enough and his family. Jack, of course, is our assistant conductor and they're just an amazing family and have been tremendous supporters.
Very good call on dedicating the concert to Dale. And I was honored to have him as a guest on the program at least once. All right, so let's talk about, before we get on to Saturday's show, let's talk about the season. How's that been for you? I mean, you jumped in when?
I jumped in February, so this will be my third concert.
This will be the third, okay.
We had a phenomenal concert in March, the Crystal Young Artist Concert. Isabella Wu was our guest artist, and the thing I've been telling everyone who heard her, people were just blown away by her performance. The amazing thing, she's only 15. We've told her that you have three more years that you can win the Crystal Young Artist. We encourage you to come back and try again. And what's amazing is she could actually win it both singing and on violin, as well as the piano, which she won it with this last time.
Tony Zammit, Executive Director, Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra with us. Now to Saturday. As you alluded, Strauss and Bartok, although there's a Ravel as well. It's called The Last Word. Why? Because it's the last concert of the season?
A little bit of a play on words there. The featured part of the performance, which will feature Dr. Mitra Sajapur, is Strauss's last four songs.
Okay.
And those were literally the last four songs he composed that were actually put out. They're very, very well known. This part is a little bit kind of odd to say. It deals with death. However, it deals with death in a very different way for folks. Instead of being macabre or dealing with it in a very romanticized way, he tried to actually pick it up, and it's an acceptance. And so it's actually peaceful and blissful music, the music of a man who's had a long, full life and is now looking forward to that final transformation.
Most famous, of course, for waltzes, but he's written things in other
And that actually is another amazing thing about this concert is all the music that we're playing is 20th century music this time.
Oh, wow.
The Bartok and the Strauss both actually were written during the war but debuted directly after it. Mitra, I think, is just going to blow it out of the park on those Strauss songs.
She has a wonderful voice.
She has an amazing voice.
We're going to feature a little bit of the Ravel piece. I went through on YouTube and I found some musical aggregations that were playing all of what you're playing Saturday night. The Mother Goose thing was the most fun to listen to, so I'm going to toss in an excerpt of that.
Yeah, it's a fantastic piece.
Well, you now, after this concert, will dive into putting your first full season together. What's that process?
Well, it's been a lot of me and Nobu sitting down trying to come up with what we'd like to present for folks next year. It is going to be a marquee year for us because it's our 40th anniversary season. We are putting together some very challenging pieces. We'll be at one point playing Richard Wagner's Tannhauser. And then on top of that, we're looking at now, and it's very early on, but a sneak preview for our Christo Youth Concert. We're looking at doing Music of the World. We're hoping an educational program to go along with that will really appeal to the kids this year.
Wow. The symphony turns 40.
Yeah.
Doesn't look 40.
No, it doesn't look 40. It hides it well.
Thanks for being with us, Tony.
Thanks for having me, Sal.
A little bit of Ravel in the background there. Saturday night, Gantner Concert Hall, Haas Fine Arts Center. Website is cvsymphony.org. Coming up, Spring Swing, Theater in the Woods, and The Last River Rat.
Support for WPR comes from Chippewa Valley Symphony with The Last Word, Strauss and Bartok, featuring soprano Mitra Sadigpour, Saturday, May 10th at Gantner Hall. More at cvsymphony.org. Support also comes from Volume 1, the alt-weekly magazine spotlighting culture and entertainment in the Chippewa Valley. Available at over 300 locations throughout Eau Claire, Chippewa Falls, and Menominee. And online at volume1.org.
Here's what's on stage in Western Wisconsin theater venues. Nonsense will be staged by the Eau Claire Children's Theater through Sunday at the Oxford Theater in Eau Claire. UW-Eau Claire's Music and Theater Arts Department will hold its Spring Short Play Festival through Saturday. The performances, directed by advanced directing students, will begin at 4 and 7 p.m. in the university's Keir Theater. The Northern Star Theater Company of Rice Lake will stage Barefoot in the Park through Sunday at the theater in Rice Lake. There is no Saturday performance. The Pine Manor Boys of Kandy, Ojai County will be presented Tuesday and Wednesday at The Space in New Richmond. Also in New Richmond, the Old Gem Theater production of Charlotte's Web will be staged for the general public on Saturday and Sunday. The show will be available for groups through June 6th at the Old Gem. That Love and Feelin', the story of the Righteous Brothers, will play Friday and Saturday at the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater in Hudson. The show will play Fridays and Saturdays and selected Sundays through August 14th. And that's some of what's happening in live theater around the region. For Spectrum West, I'm Jim Oliver.
What a guy. Another Saturday night option for those living in and around Menominee is the annual Spring Swing, a proud night for the performers and the energetic Menominee Band Parents Organization. Jake Karkula is band director at Menominee High School. First of all, as a band director and a leader of a program that's evolving here in West Wisconsin, an area well known for great music and good musicians, and especially music education. Tell me, Jake, how does a program evolve?
I think it evolves from, you know, commitment from the directors, commitment from the students, and commitment from the parents. Students are naturally drawn to a quality product, and I believe that if, as a director, you're able to create a quality product that students want to participate in and you strive for excellence, I think students want to be part of that program.
How do you appeal to students to help it evolve? Do you say, this is your program, it's only as good as you guys?
I think that's a good start to it. First of all, I put in, you know, 100% of the effort, 100% of the time. I teach a study skills class. I teach a music theory class, a special education music class. So I have a lot of responsibilities, but beyond that, I really try to put as much effort as possible into the ensembles as well and encourage the students to strive for excellence. And back to that last answer, really try to create a quality product that students want to be a part of and to help them create performances that they're proud of as well.
What signs do you look for that demonstrate progress along the way? Is it just the sound of what they're doing, or is it in their eyes, their enthusiasm? What?
I think all of the above. If they're able to perform music well, obviously it sounds good. A good measure of students and whether they enjoy what they're doing is how fast they progress with what they're doing. If they're excited about something, they're naturally going to put more effort into it. So you see it in the quality of the performance. But you can also hear students talking about what they enjoy as well. I've got probably about 20 students in here during lunch, and during lunch I like to go around and socialize with them and kind of listen in on their conversations, see what kind of music that they enjoy playing, and sometimes you hear things that they don't enjoy playing so much as well.
Music education is, without a doubt, a team sport, isn't it?
Exactly, it is.
You brought up the parents initially, but you have a lot of homage to pay to music teachers who are sending the kids to you.
Oh, yeah. We've got a great middle school program. Jesse Farnloff is the middle school band director and directs the 6th through 8th bands. He's got a huge 6th grade program and does a nice job with the 7th and 8th grade program as well. And furthermore, someone has to send the students to Jesse down to middle school, and we've got Karen Jansen, Tim Lutz, and Marnie Paquette, as well as April Price, who's filling in for Marnie right now in the elementary level, and they do a wonderful job with the kindergarten through fifth grade programs.
So there's your team.
There it is.
You know, music probably won't be something a young person pursues into adulthood. I mean, a few of them do it. How do you help young people pigeonhole the role of music in their young lives, or do they even think about that?
You know, some students think about it. Some students don't realize how important it is until they don't have it anymore. You know, you try to explain the importance of music. It's everywhere. It's a team sport. Actually, people that study music, and I don't know the statistics on this at the moment, but there's a part of their brain that is a little bit bigger than other people's brains. And it's a lifelong activity that people are able to participate in throughout their entire lives. And I know there's some good testimony of that in many of the community bands that exist throughout the area, including the Ludington Guard Band. There are some young students in there, some of my students, in fact, from Menominee High School. And there are some people in there that have been in the band for over 50 years, and they're still physically able to play because it's a lifelong activity that you're able to participate in.
You don't really realize the value of it until many times years from now you go in the basement, you find your trumpet, and then you haul it out, maybe you start playing it again.
Yeah, I've heard many stories of that happening before. Yeah. I have a student that within the last week has brought in two instruments for me to look at because she found them in her grandma's basement. It's just amazing hearing the stories about community members and their experiences in band in high school, and you know, that's what they think about from high school is their experiences in band or their experiences playing football, basketball, gymnastics, you name it. They don't necessarily remember a lot about their classes, but it's the extracurricular activities that they participate in that they have their memories from.
Yeah, and sometimes it's something you never, it's like typing, you never forget it.
No, you don't.
Or riding
sometimes
a bike.
You get a little rusty, but yeah, you never do forget it.
Rusty's good. Shaking off the rust is fun.
Yep.
On the phone with us, Jake Karkula. He's band director, Menominee High School, and they have a big event coming up Saturday. Jake, run with it. I'll let you tell us about it.
This Saturday, we have our annual Spring Swing Dance. And the doors will open at 6:30, and shortly after the doors open, we'll have our Menominee Middle School Jazz Ensemble perform. At 7 o'clock, there will be dance lessons with professional dance instructors Dave and Karen Goggin. At 8 o'clock, the swing dance will begin, and it features the Menominee High School Jazz Ensemble, as well as the Tropel Big Band, who is a local jazz ensemble consisting of band directors, retired band directors, professional musicians, and community members. Throughout the night, there'll be refreshments and desserts for purchase. There'll be a silent auction with some great items, including Disney World tickets, some Warner Brothers Studios merchandise. There'll also be a swing dance contest that's going to be going on, and a $50 prize. The grand finale of the night at around 9 o'clock to 9:30 is going to feature both the Menominee High School Jazz Band and the Tropel Big Band battling it out. So it's going to be a pretty neat grand finale for the night.
Wow, you forgot one thing. Don't you dare miss it.
Yeah, don't you dare miss it. And tickets. Tickets will be available at the door, or they can be purchased from Lammers Food Fest in Menominee. Mm-hmm. They are $5 for students and seniors, and they are $8 for adults.
And that's a bargain.
It is a bargain.
For all the stuff you mentioned? Wow. And it's the annual. What annual is this?
Well over 10 years. This is my ninth year as a director.
Yeah. Okay, Jake, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you, Al.
Have fun Saturday.
Great.
They're swinging in Menominee. Wow. Spectrum Memo, remember Saturday is the first annual Northwest Wisconsin Writers Festival at UW-Barron County. It begins at 11 a.m., a full day of readings, discussion, and more. The 9th annual Finals Fest concert is Friday at UW-River Falls at the outdoor Melvin Wall Amphitheater on campus. That starts at 7 p.m. Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Al Ross. Thanks for being with us today. We appreciate your attendance. This week, Jim Oliver, in addition to having his usual compendium of stage entertainment happening in western Wisconsin, jumped on the phone and dialed in to what's going on in Shell Lake.
Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, commonly shortened to Alice in Wonderland, is an 1865 novel written by Lewis Carroll. The Youth Theater of the Theater in the Woods will present a stage version of Alice's Adventures in Wonderland Friday through Sunday at the Erica Kwan Memorial Theater in Shell Lake. The director is Jody Peck, who joins us to talk about Alice's adventures. Welcome to Spectrum West.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you for having me.
Well, you told me that this is your first time as a director for Theater in the Woods, and although you have been the youth liaison between the youth and the board of directors for 3 years, let's talk about the youth theater. What can you tell me about it?
Our youth program is thriving right now at Theater in the Woods. We have our yearly productions every June, and this year we've added an additional spring production, which is Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. It's something that we've been wanting to do for several years now, so very, very excited that that's happening. And we also have an additional youth production happening in July. So the interesting thing is our next three productions at Theater in the Woods are all youth productions. Very excited about that.
Now, you must have an awful lot of youth in order to support an ambitious program like that.
We do. Most of the participants come from Shellake and Spooner, although in this production we have actors coming from Cumberland, Webster, and Siren in Grantsburg as well. So a lot of homeschool students are involved as well as traditional school students. So it's a really nice mix of kids of all ages, from 9 all the way up to 18.
I believe you said that you also do some after-school productions. Is that with the school district, or what is that involved?
Right. For about 5 years or so now, I've been directing plays in the after-school and the summer school programs in Spooner at the elementary and middle school. So that's where most of my directing experience is with.
Now, have you directed adult productions somewhere in the past?
No, I have not. I've been in adult productions, but this is my first time directing.
So what got you started in this theater stuff?
My children, actually.
Oh, really? Oh, you weren't an 8-year-old prodigy or something like that in theaters.
Well, when I was in high school, I participated in the plays there, but then I did nothing in acting until my oldest son got involved when he was about 9 years old at Theater in the Woods, and he is now 21. And he acted all the way through high school, and in fact, all four of our children have been heavily involved at Theater in the Woods. You can't help but to want to get more involved when you're around. It's a wonderful organization and just fantastic people there.
I'm curious, because Shell Lake is not a major metropolitan area, so how do you account for this tremendous theater interest in that community?
I think people are hungry for more arts. You know, we tend to focus on more athletics here. And there is actually a really nice group of people out there looking for more, you know, more than the football games and the basketball games, a place where they fit in, you know, they can use their creativity and not only be accepted, but also be welcomed and appreciated and enjoyed. And there's a lot of power in theater and in performing for others.
She is Jody Peck, who is director of the Theater in the Woods youth production of Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. Well, the aforementioned Alice in Wonderland and Alice Through the Looking Glass were among the first books I read as a child, but for those who either missed out on that experience or have forgotten, why don't you tell us the story?
It's a wonderful story about a young girl who, in our play, it starts with her falling down a rabbit hole. And she falls into Wonderland and not quite sure what's going on. And she meets the most fantastic characters from a white rabbit who is very obsessed with being late everywhere and who later befriends Alice, to a queen who is very domineering, and her king, who is kind of a buffoon, who thinks he has power, but he does not. The play is full of energy, and the situations that she gets into and the characters that she encounters are absolutely hilarious. So it's a great, fun, high-energy story.
Now, does the play pretty much stick to the story in the book? I'm not familiar with the play at all.
Yeah, it stays very close. So you will recognize the characters. We have a marvelous Cheshire Cat, and we have the Mad Hatter and the March Hare and Dormouse for the tea party. We have the Hard Soldiers in their amazing costumes. They look absolutely adorable. We have the Caterpillar. We have the Duchess. So a lot of the recognizable characters. We also have Humpty Dumpty in our play. The very sarcastic and snide little man, and he's hilarious. So it's a nice mix of all those characters that you would recognize as being part of Alice in Wonderland and more. It's just fun.
Hmm. There are 40 members in the cast, as I recall, and are they all children or are there some adults?
Nope, they're all adults.
They're all children. Okay.
Yeah. So the oldest person in our cast is 18 years old.
Oh, okay. So they can pull off a larger person or larger character, I suppose.
They're amazing. Mm-hmm. This is such a talented group of actors. I really can't believe I get to work with them. They're amazing.
I'm just curious. Sometimes people are able to expand or shrink the cast depending upon how many people show up to audition. Are you able to do that with this show at all?
Absolutely, yes. And in fact, the wonderful thing is the playwright actually gives you permission to do so, which is pretty rare for a script. Usually mm-hmm. you're not allowed to edit your script at all. Mm-hmm. And this one had suggestions for how to do it. For example, it actually recommended me making Alice, which is the main character, into two characters and alternating scenes. And I actually have taken the playwright up on that suggestion.
Oh, really?
And, yeah. Our Alices are played by two very talented actresses, and they alternate scenes, and it's wonderful.
I've never seen that done before, but
yeah.
that sounds interesting.
I think it adds to the story, and the wonderful thing about the script, and this is in the playwright's notes, there's a lot of text in the play that actually supports that. You know, for example, Alice says at one point, "I knew who I was in the morning, but I hardly know who I am now." And another time she says, "Well, things are getting curiouser and curiouser."
So I think it
really supports it. And, mm-hmm. of course, the girls are dressed identically as Alice, and their hairstyles are identical. And they're, you know, the same age and everything. But I think it has added so much to our production. And they start and end the play in a very interesting way, which I don't want to give away.
For heaven's sakes, don't do that.
It ties everything together just beautifully.
Talk a little bit about the tech side. Talk about costumes. That must have been quite a challenge for a costumer.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, and I have to say that I am such a fortunate director who has an amazing support group. My sister, Cheryl First, she actually created most of the costumes for the play. My other sister, Stephanie, created a lot. My mother-in-law created costumes. Grandmothers and mothers created costumes. It was a huge team effort. Last night we had one of our dress rehearsals, and they were all on stage, and it was amazing to see them all in, you know, full costume and full dress. It's a wonderful production, wonderful and colorful, and yeah, I can't say enough. It's really a visually appealing show.
Well, that's the joy of community theater, of course, is people getting together to put on a production, and they may not be professionals, but they're dedicated, and that's the important part of it all.
Right.
Well, we've been visiting with Jody Peck, who is director of the Theater in the Woods youth production of Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. The show plays Friday through Sunday at the Eric Aquam Memorial Theater in Shell Lake. For tickets, you can call the theater's reservations line at 715-468-4387, or you can do an internet search for the Theater in the Woods. Jody Peck, thanks so much for talking to us. It's been a joy to visit with.
Thank you, Jim.
Support for WPR comes from Water Street Deli in Eau Claire, offering fresh hummus, baba ganoush, and pita chips. Available at the deli, the downtown farmers market, and Just Local Food. On Facebook and at waterstreetdeliandgrocery.com.
Thank you, ma'am. Couple of Spectrum memos here for you. The Menominee Art Music Society presents a spring recital next Sunday, May 18th, 3 p.m., at Peace Lutheran Church in Menominee. At the Heidi Center in Chippewa Falls, Saturday at 2 p.m., BMO Harris Bank presents Wiley and the Hairy Man, an African folktale from the UW-Eau Claire, a theater for young audiences. Auditions for Thoroughly Modern Millie will be next Tuesday and Wednesday at 4 and 5 p.m., performances coming in July. Everything available at cvca.net. And, of course, the phone number there is 726-9000. You've met him before, maybe in person, speaking to a naturalist, ecology, environmental, or young people's group. You've undoubtedly heard him on the Big River radio wave or were up close and personal at a live performance. You may have seen him in the documentary Tales of the Last River Rat. Doesn't matter where you've met him, seen, or heard him. If you've done it once, you'll remember Kenny Solway. He's also written several books, the latest of which is The Dogs and I, True Tales, that's T-A-I-L-S, from the Mississippi. So this week, it's been a while, he and I sat down at the Mondovi Family Restaurant for some lunch and some conversation. The book is called The Dogs and I, and knowing you as I do, I'm thinking that this is a book that's been in you for quite a long time. In fact, if people had known you better, this might have been the first book you wrote, because dogs have been so close to you over your lifetime.
Well, dogs, Al, have always been my best friends. I spent 28 years living a solitary life in the Whitman Swamp, a 6,000-acre, seasonally flooded hardwood Mississippi backwater swamp. I had three shacks out there, and I have always enjoyed my own company as much or more than anybody's. However, if you have a dog, you've got a real friend. And dogs don't talk back. Dogs always are glad to see you. They don't care how you smell. They don't care how you look. A dog doesn't care what your bank account looks like, what kind of house they live in, or what they'll have for supper. They're satisfied. And you can leave 5 minutes and come back, dog jumping up and down. They're glad to see you. And now when I train a young dog and put him in the front of the canoe, I need to have dogs that ride well in a canoe. That's the way I travel the swamp. And I say, sit, stay. I know darn well that young dog ain't going to sit and stay very long. So I go over to the bank and I cut me a willow whip. Nothing that's going to hurt him, mind you, but something that where I can reach from the stern up to the bow and touch them meaningfully, because I don't want to be tipped upside down that black boot-sucking Mississippi mud. So we set off down through the slough, and it ain't long. That dog's looking at the birds. It's leaning over the side, lapping at the water. It's jumping back and forth. I pick up the willow whip. I whop her once, twice, maybe three times. I say, sit, stay. 3 10-hour days, that young dog is trained to ride in the canoe. She enjoys the ride, so do I. I get out on the bank, my dog runs to me. She licks my hand, my face. She's happy to see me. She says, I don't care what you just did to me, Dad, the last few days. I love you anyhow. That's called unconditional love. Now, next time you go canoeing, you take the best human friend you have. You put them in the front of the canoe. You cut you a willow whip. They don't do just the way you want them to. You lay them a red streak down the back of their neck. You get out on the bank, you're going to be minus one best friend. Lucky if you get off with that. And therein lies the difference between critter nature and human nature. I think that critter nature is much more loving and forgiving.
So the part that dogs have played in your life literally means that they deserve this book, don't they?
Yeah. My dogs were all working dogs as well as best friends. And, yeah, they deserve being remembered.
You're becoming even more famous than you already are for a quote that I've heard you say a few times and I've also read. And that is, people ask you if you had something to do over again in your life, it would be what?
It would be, I'd like to be more like a dog. I haven't reached that point, sad to say. However, I do think that it's a goal worth working towards. Probably take me all my life, I still won't get there.
Do you know anybody, any humans who are like a dog?
I used to know several, in fact. Old-timers that were a lot like a dog, even in their appearance. Some were shaggy around the edges. They were tougher than nails, some of the real old river rats. And yeah, they were a lot like a dog.
And it was at that point that our food was delivered. And unlike the dogs of which we spoke, we ate slowly and appreciatively. After which, my midday in Mondovi conversation with Kenny Solway continued. One of the things I like to ask authors is their process of writing. What's your process of writing? Because I know you well enough to know you don't walk around with some electronic thing that you dictate into. So when the light bulb lights up, what does Kenny Solway do?
I take a pen and a pad of paper and write it down. I'm computer illiterate, so I do everything in longhand. And I do it when it feels right. I don't sit down in the morning at 8 o'clock and say, well, I got to write an hour this morning. That's making a job out of it.
I mean, if someone saw The Last River Rat with a cell phone, images out the window.
Amen, brother. Technologically, I'm challenged. I just can't see what the hurry is. We don't, you know, life's too short to hurry through it. I want to be like that old dog. Just when I eat lunch, lay down.
While I was preparing for this interview, I thought to myself, have there ever been any female river rats?
Yes, I did know one, but not by herself. I mean, her husband and her worked together as set lining for catfish, trapping, turtle snagging. But she was certain she could have kept up with any man.
Really?
Oh, yeah. She was tough as nails. An unusual lady.
I have to say, Kenny, that you are one of the most interesting people I've ever met. So who fills those shoes for you?
One of the most interesting people I ever met was named Otmar Probst. And he was born on the river, on an island, in 1900. There's still an island named after him in the Mississippi River. Otmar Probst was my idol. Otmar knew how to do anything. He knew how to build fishing nets, how to trap turtles. He made everything that he ever used. He made it himself. Very little did he buy. And when the water was high, he'd sit on his dock with his boat nearby, and he'd catch lumber that was floating down the river, and then he'd use it to build little sheds or whatever.
Really?
Otmar Probst was just a great, great fellow. As far as I'm concerned, I doubt anybody will these days make a full-time living as a river rat anymore. You simply can't support anything resembling a modern lifestyle on a river rat wages.
Let's jump back to the Dogs and I book quickly. A little bit of what's in it. Is it just chapters about dogs that you've owned?
Yeah, there's 13 chapters, all dogs that I've known from the time I was, as they say in the hill country, knee-high to a grasshopper, until now, the present dog. Each, of course, has their own personality, their own story, their own experiences, and that's what I tried to put down in the book.
What if a young man approached you at one of your readings and said, Kenny, I'd like to be a river rat? Now, you just told me that you didn't think someone could exist that way anymore, but let's imagine that someone could still be a river rat. What would you tell him he had to do to become one?
The first thing is that being a river rat sounds like it's adventuresome and a romantic life. You work harder than you ever would on a regular job. You freeze. You roast. You get eaten up by bugs. You're never what you would call clean. If cleanliness is next to godliness, then in my case, I'll never get there because it's a dirty, sweaty, nasty job. Another thing I'd have to tell them, you're going to have to cut down on your spending because you ain't going to make much. Of course, it's not what you make, it's what you spend that counts. And you're going to have to to settle for a simpler life. Thoreau always said that simplicity, there's greatness in simplicity. A river rat needs to be as simple living as possible. Mm-hmm. Now, that includes, would you want to get married, I'd have to ask you? Now, who's going to marry you? Who's going to want to live like that? So there's an awful lot of thinking has to be done.
Have you ever apprenticed anybody?
Well, some. A lot of kids. In fact, the local superintendent of schools would sometimes get a hold of me, and he'd say, you know, I just don't know what we're going to do with so-and-so. They're falling through the cracks. They hate school. And I'd go down to school, and I'd get in contact with that kid, and I would, I guess nowadays they call it mentor that kid, and we'd begin with manners, being mannerly, just simple things, excuse me, shaking hands, thank you.
The thing used to be a good solid handshake.
Yes. I'm not necessarily putting down today's, let's call them, the ones who even call themselves computer nerds. However, a lot of times when I shake hands with those folks, it's like having a wet dish rag. There isn't a whole lot of grip there, and a whole lot of looking you square in the hairy eyeball. And that's bound to be. People just don't do a lot of physical work anymore. And the calloused hand is rare to find.
Tell us what Kenny Salway's working on now. What's next? What can we expect?
I'm working right now on a book that began as a ballad, a song that I wrote about 25 years ago called The Bullfrog Ball. And The Bullfrog Ball talks about, it's written in the style of Robert Service, like the cremation of Sam McGee and such. And I'm now going to see if Sam Shinta, my publisher at Fulcrum Publishing, will be able to get that made into a book. And it should be out by next spring, he thinks. There's a lot of illustrations that are going to have to be done, but the text is pretty well finished now.
And this is for young people?
This is for kids, yeah. Well, kids of any age, whoever. Never get too grown up. Remain a little kiddish, because then you don't lose that sense of curiosity and adventure.
So leave us with one sage line. Leave us with something that only the rat could say to us.
It's been a hard, long winter. One of the hardest I've ever seen this past winter. Not only physically, but mentally. Cabin fever crept in. But then there's an old saying that if you can't stand the winter, you don't deserve the spring. And now we are seeing the coming of spring. And the birds are back. Oh, it's just grand. How grand that is. Go out in the morning and listen to those birds sing. And they all sing in a different key. And they all sing a different song. And they all sing at once. If we did that, locked ourselves in a room with 20 people, we couldn't take it. But the bird song is a beautiful, beautiful choir that sings for us every morning. Get out there. Sit down for a few minutes. Be selfish. Say, this is my time. And sit down and listen to them birds. They breathe new life. Their song gives new life to me. And I hope it does to you folks.
Kenny Solway, The Last River Rat. The book is The Dogs and I, True Tales from the Mississippi, from Fulcrum Press. Available wherever fine books are sold. Spectrum Memo, Caraduri Pottery has their 28th annual spring show this weekend, Friday and Saturday. Join the artists for drinks and hors d'oeuvres Friday at 5:30. Eau Claire Regional Arts Center State Theater is busy Thursday night. That's tonight if you're listening on Thursday. It's the music of Scott Weiland and the Wildabouts at 8 o'clock. And Friday night, Tent Show Radio Live, Culture Under Canvas, and that is at 7:30. There's a native plant sale at Beaver Creek Reserve north of Fall Creek Saturday. That's from 8:30 to 1. That's always fun. Community Radio WHYS is celebrating 10 years with 10 acts Saturday at The Plus. That's in downtown Eau Claire. The Wide Spot PAC in Stockholm presents Emergence, a showcase of student visual and performance arts, Saturday at 7:30 p.m. Tickets online, the address widespotperformingarts.org, and also tickets at the door. At the Fifth Center in Hudson, ballroom dance parties are being offered on the third Saturday in May. That's the 17th in the dance studio. The Minneapolis Guitar Quartet will perform Sunday, May 18th at 7 p.m. Auditions for The Wizard of Oz, running in July and early August, will be May 18th through the 20th. There are exhibitions by seven regional artists in the galleries at the Phipps. TheFipps.org, that's their website. The phone number 386-2305. Colleen Ray and the Girl Singers, Broadway's Best, are coming to the Festival Theater in St. Croix Falls for a special Mother's Day concert. That's Sunday at 2 p.m. The website there is festivaltheater.org. The children's play The Marvelous Adventures of Till will be presented Friday at 7:30, and that's p.m. in the UW Barron County Fine Arts Theater, all about a mischievous boy, Till Eulenspiegel. That's T-Y-L. Hope that's pronounced right. Feature several fine young actors and actresses. Tickets at the box office, 234-8176. Next week on Spectrum West, a week's worth of art called Fresh Paint from the Citizens of Imagination Nation. Another book for kids from the pen or keyboard of author and neighbor Joanne Linden. And more, always more, on Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. It's been fun today. Have a nice weekend, and we'll be back next week. See you then.